Welcome to the Randstad Third Quarter Results 2012 conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I will now turn the call over to your host, CFO Robert Jan van de Kraats. Sir, you may begin.
Thank you. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the third quarter 2012 results of Randstad. I'm here sitting together with a couple of colleagues, including Ben Noteboom and Jacques van den Broek and Jan-Pieter van Winsen. We're going to share with you the results of what we consider to be a rather good quarter in uncertain circumstances, and also an improvement compared to the results of the second quarter. I'm going to move to slide three now, which reflects the agenda. It's as usual that we're going to take roughly 1 hour to take you through the performance, the financial results, the outlook, and then move to Q&A. I'm moving on to slide five, which is a summary. The header says most of it, cost base down by 80 million, which is a substantial reduction compared to Q2. It's an acceleration of the cost base adjustments, which we already announced in July. It is something we felt was necessary, and it's now coming through. Later on in this presentation, I will share some details on this. Please note that the comparison is made sequentially and on a constant currency basis. The EBITA at the end of the quarter arrived at 161 million compared to last year, 175 million, which is a 40 basis points difference, and that is a decrease of the gap compared to Q2, which still amounted to 80 basis points, also reflecting the acceleration of the cost base reductions. The results have been adjusted for integration costs, 6.5 million euros, and restructuring costs, mainly in the Netherlands, 9.5 million, but I get back to that later on. Moving on to slide six, a gradual decline continues, and actually this reflects an atypical pattern for our business. We've said it before, but you can see that the upturn has lasted not too long. The good news in this slide is that the upper two curves, the orange one and the green one, are the countries in which Randstad made its most recent two acquisitions. It's the U.S. and Japan continuing to show growth, whereas the other curves are in negative territory, and that's the total for the group as well as the European business. This decline in the most recent quarter is also supported by an easier comparison base for last year, in which growth, and again, growth, we were still growing in those days, moved from +10% to +6.5% in Q3. Slide seven summarizes the key priorities that we have shared with you before. Focus on cost, and that is supported by accelerating the necessary adjustments in the field, both but also overhead and head office cost. We're also shifting our focus in some countries from market share gains to profitability, and we do that through a variation of options, which are listed down here. At the same time, we are capturing growth opportunities and improving our business mix, and we continue to invest in our profitable growth in the U.S., in Canada, and Latin America, in China, Japan, Brazil. Those are relevant investments and also are reflected in our cost base, and we'll continue to do so going forward. I move on to slide eight now, which summarizes the developments in North America. We are capturing profitable growth here. That's reflected by an increased conversion ratio. We always exclude these synergies, and then we can see the incremental conversion ratio approaching the 50% mark clearly. Organic revenue has continued to grow at the pace of 4% in this quarter compared to 7% in the previous quarter. We see growth in both staffing and in professionals, and stable growth in Canada through the quarter. Perm fees are up 9%, which is clearly an improvement contributing to gross profit. and this was 6% in the second quarter. Staffing in-house, 4% up, professionals 4% up as well. EBITA margin increased from 4.7% last year in the third quarter, now 5.1%, and underlying is also the improved business mix, the fact that perm has increased, but also RPO, recruitment process outsourcing, reflects a bigger share of our business now. The SFN integration on slide 9, we continue to make good progress. The physical integration of staffing and professionals has been completed. The IT migration of staffing has been completed in this quarter. So we've done, things have been transferred to our center in Atlanta. The IT migration of in-house is planned for Q4 and is well underway. And the IT migration in professionals will start in Q4. And that, in line with previous announcements, is somewhat delayed due to our decision not to let the risk increase, because this is a more complicated integration. So we have chosen to go for a low-risk approach here. Integration costs in the third quarter amounted to 6.5 million, and we're now at 32 million euros almost. Synergies are moving on very nicely. And we expect the full amount of synergies to be materialized next year. In this quarter, they amounted to 7.2 million euros, which compares to 6 million last quarter. Across the board, we believe that both will go up. So we expect to exceed the target in terms of synergies, but we also expect to exceed the indicated level of integration cost. And we'll provide you with a more detailed update at the Investor Day in November. France on slide 10, increased uncertainty. This is a difficult context. Revenue down by 11% compared to 3% in Q2. As I said, it's clearly an uncertain context, and it doesn't seem that the government is very engaged in improving this at the moment. We are disappointed about the developments in the French markets and the obstacles that are being created. That's not a good development. We do see, however, growth in our in-house business, which also is the result of some transfers, but we do see an accelerating decline in staffing and in our professionals' business. We are very much focused, as we have also stated in previous quarters, on driving client profitability. So we'll be very critical towards what we do accept and what we do not accept. At the EBITDA level, 2.5, lower than last year, the 3.6. This is also the result of a change in the mix of our business. And also the refined calculation method of the subsidies still has some negative impact, less than in previous quarters. It's now at 20 basis points, and we do anticipate a favorable impact in Q4, and this is purely the result of the way this is accounted for. The Netherlands on the next slide, 11, ensuring adaptability in a market that is not too bad still. Revenues down by 3% compared to 1% in Q2, and we do see continued growth in our in-house business and our payrolling business. Yacht is our professionals business in the Netherlands at -6, and it shows an improvement of the utilization rate, which effectively results in lower cost of idle time. The gross margin in the Netherlands is sequentially stable, but it continues to be a competitive environment, and we also have underlying the change in the business mix. We have a strong focus on cost and profitability, and clearly the cost base is down sequentially, whereas in Q3 we have absorbed higher marketing costs in the Netherlands relating to the Olympic Games, and the cost base is down because of the restructuring programs announced earlier, but also because of natural adjustments of the cost base. Also in the Netherlands, given the competitive environment, we have a strong focus on client profitability. And we have an additional restructuring program in the Netherlands amounting to 7.5 million, for which we anticipate a payback period of 12 months. Savings will come through in Q4, and in the quarter we did see FTEs going down by 9% comparing June to September. EBITDA margin now at 5.7% in the Netherlands. Germany, a challenging environment on slide 12. Organic revenue down by 5% compared to Q2 at minus 2. But we do see a clear deteriorating trend throughout the quarter. I'll give you the exit rates at the end of the presentation. This mixes up a cyclical pattern, but also some structural changes. The collective labor agreement adjustment kicks in on the 1st of November and does create some uncertainty in the German market about, you know, how to apply this and what the total effect will be, and we anticipate that this effect will gradually disappear. We did see growth at in-house continuing, plus 2, staffing was a negative, minus 13, and we continue to see solid growth in our professional business, especially IT, of 11%. The gross margin in Germany improved. It was one working day less compared to last year, but across the board, Germany for the full year has three more bank holidays, which have like 70 basis points effect on the gross margin in Germany for the full year. We have a good cost control. FTEs are down 10% since the beginning of the year, and that's also reflecting the necessary adjustments. The EBITDA margin is up 6.2% sequentially compared to 4.2% in Q2. The year-over-year gap reduced to 1.2%. Underlying the collective labor agreement, we see wages being adjusted, varying by region in Germany, and the variations are 2.5 or 7% up. Then we have Belgium improving the mix, and actually there's not too much to elaborate upon. That's quite a good performance, as you can see also at the level of the EBITDA margin, 4.3 last year, 3.8 this year. It's supported by a stable gross margin and also good adjustments. In the UK, actually, if you look at revenue development, it's a minus, but it continues at roughly the same level as Q2, minus 8 last quarter, minus 9 this quarter. The public sector in growth, professionals growing. So it's not an easy context, but a few things are going right here. EBITDA margin at break-even for now. We'll have to see what's happening in the foreseeable future, but this was not too bad. Iberia, on slide 15, we're rather proud. This is demonstrating resilience. It's a very difficult context, but the combined EBITDA margin still stands at 2.5%. In Spain, revenue was down by 12%, and in Q2 by 9%, and in Portugal, Q2 12%, and now 13% down. In Spain, it's clearly driven by manufacturing, logistics, and our professionals business, which is a reflection of the program we have announced earlier, the acceleration program to build our professionals business, and also in Spain, this shows growth. And, of course, across the board, good cost control, a good recovery ratio, I would say. Moving on to slide 16, which is reflecting the revenue development per industry. Well, it's, I would say, a clear indication here. The French market having no segment with positive developments, the Netherlands being a little in the middle, Germany negative in the blue-collar sector, but IT services and health and social work still positive, and in the U.S., still substantial part of the economy showing growth. Then we move on to the financial results and the outlook. On slide 18, the income statement for Q3. And then please note that last year Q3 did not include the full consolidation of SFN. It was consolidated as from the 2nd of September. And as you can see here, the EBITDA again 161 compared to last year the 175 million, a little lower in the P&L amortization, 43 million. That compares to Q3 last year, but please note that SFN was not completely included then. On a sequential basis, Q2 showed 56 million of amortization here, and now it's 43 million. The fact that it's lower is the result of the fact that we had a very short period for amortization of the SFN brand name. That has now come to an end. Next slide, 19, the key financial points. The effective tax rate amounted to 32%. Our guidance remains. We still anticipate to be in the range 29%-32% for the full year. Diluted EPS down to 0.62 from 0.66 last year. Our DSO improved by one day versus last year. It's now 53 days. If you go back a little further, at the early days of the merger between Randstad and Vedior, we were at 60 days. We have been on a continued path to reduce our DSO. This is typically the result of reducing our overdue amounts in the various countries, because we see pressure from large clients, especially to increase payment terms, but we still continue to see an opportunity to reduce the overdue amounts that we have with our clients. We did have good free cash flow, and typically the largest part of our free cash flow is generated in the second part of the year, 207 million, but I'll get back to that in the cash flow statement. The leverage ratio sequentially down to 2.2. We have clearly a seasonal pattern in the leverage ratio. It was at 2.4 at the high point in the year, always in Q2, following dividend payment, holiday allowance payment. Now the solid cash flow has reduced it to 2.2, and this will gradually move towards the end of the year, as we have said before, somewhere around 2.0 at the end of the year. Within the internal limits that we do have. Net debt down to 1.4 billion at the end of the quarter. We have a syndicated credit facility in place next to uncommitted lines of 1.8 billion, which runs until May 2013. Already last year, we have refinanced most of it through a new syndicated credit facility amounting to 1.3 billion, which runs until 2016, and part of it even until 2017. That's the bigger part of it. The refinancing of the remaining part is in progress. We are looking at various forms of financing with different maturity profiles, and we are confident that this process will be completed well on time. On the next slide, the segment performance 20. Slide 20, that is staffing, in-house, and professionals. Looking at the various segments, staffing, strong growth in North America led by admin and perm, especially the gradual slowdown in Europe, and the addition of SFN came in with a below-average EBITA margin, as you all know. In-house, the main driver is U.S. and also France here next to the Netherlands, but compared to a strong comparison base, but still doing well, mainly due to an increased share of wallet at existing clients. Professionals, we do see growth in the U.S. across most sectors. Also, impact from the public sector clearly here in the Netherlands and in the U.K. It also includes a slowdown of perm fees in Europe. We have added SFN here with above-average EBITA margin. The gross margin bridge on the next slide, 21. We are comparing the year-on-year gross margin development, Q3 last year, Q3 this year, 18.1% and now 18.2%. You can see what's in between. SFN came in with an above-average gross margin of having an impact of 0.2%. Then Q4, Q1, Q2, and Q3, you can see price mix effects. It's not just price, it's also the gross margin as a whole. Having a total impact of negative 0.4%, then HRS contributing a positive of 0.3%, adding in total to the 18.2%. The temp margin across the various countries is affected by the competitive environment that we do have, especially in Europe. And the seasonal impact, which is typical in Belgium in the third quarter due to students, is in line with last year. And as we've mentioned before, we have a continued focus on client profitability that is key to us, because we see some deals in the market that are not and will never be contributing to the profitability of us or anyone else, and that we consider to be unjustified. Looking at operating expenses on the next slide, 22, we have included this time a comparison between the OPEX development year on year, the upper part of the slide, and the sequential development Q2 towards Q3. I'll take the sequential development first. Our expenses in Q2 amounted to 648, and this is on a constant currency basis. And FX has added 8 million in order to realize that comparison base. And then you see the 18 million broken down into the various green boxes. Synergies, an increase of 1 million euros. Organic adjustments in Europe and North America. Organic rest of the world, that's flat. And then we have organic at corporate level, a minus of 2, adding to a total of 18 million. And that makes us arrive at 638 million. FTEs are down throughout the quarter by almost 800, and of course that's mainly Europe. The recovery ratio as a result of this is clearly going towards the right targets now. OPEX comparison year on year, that's reflected in the upper slide, but I think that's clearly clarified by itself. So then I move on to the next slide, which is the cost reduction initiatives. We felt it would make sense to show you the impact of the various initiatives that we have in place at Randstad. The first source for adjustment of cost, of course, is field steering, and that was supported by staff turnover across our network, which is exceeding 20%. And typically the majority of staff turnover is in the field organization. That's where people have either their first or second job, are relatively young, well educated, so they typically find a career in the labor markets. And we're also working in the context of field steering on the optimization of our network, of our distribution network. We prefer larger branches to smaller branches. Then, and it's not written here, of course we also have natural attrition in the back office, in the head office, but that typically is lower than in the front office. Another source of cost reductions is synergies here, SFN, and then we have restructuring programs in place that have been announced over the last quarters, addressing overhead and head office, back offices, and also branch efficiencies. Now, in the lower part of this slide, we have outlined the cost savings of 18 million from Q2 to Q3. And then in the next columns, we have indicated how we have organized for this. So out of the 18 million, 3 million are the result of restructuring and synergies. 13 million is the result of field steering. So that is the regular natural adjustments of the organization. And then the remainder is the corporate costs. So I think this helps you to understand the ability to adjust the organization at Randstad. By the way, the 70 to 100 million annualized ambition, I think it's clear we're well on the way here, and this assumes a mid-single-digit decline as we have outlined last quarter. And of course, if things would get worse, then we'll follow the same patterns. We'll just have to do more. The balance sheet of Randstad. Slide 24, I already elaborated on the net debt and the DSO as well as the leverage ratio. I think this is moving into the right direction. The cash flow statement, a good free cash flow for this quarter, which was used to reduce net debt. And please note that comparing Q2 and Q3, we see sequentially a somewhat higher level of revenues. That's the seasonal pattern, and that absorbs typically some working capital. This quarter was also supported by the fact that at the end of Q2 some payments were delayed and came in the early days of Q3. Again, Q3 ends at the weekend, so we'll have some of that impact as well coming into Q4. But I would say this is the typical and solid reduction of net debt at the end of the quarter. Well, finally, the outlook for the next quarter. Key priorities at Randstad continue to be recapturing profitable growth in North America, Asia, and Latin America. We'll continue to make investments whenever necessary. We'll continue to focus strong on field steering. We continue to have our focus on cost and also on an effective recovery ratio, as we have discussed with you many times. We continue to align overhead and the head office with the field, and client profitability remains key to us. The growth per working day throughout the quarter moved from zero in June to -3 in September, and whereas it was relatively stable throughout the quarter, looking at the numbers in October, it clearly indicates to us that things are not improving. So we continue to see a gradual decline in Europe, accelerating decline in France and Germany. Please also note that the comparison base in Q4 will become easier again, in line with my previous remarks, and no significant working day impact is anticipated for Q4. We're well on our way to meet the savings targets, of course, and the exit rate, so the September numbers for Randstad in the Netherlands were -3, in France -13, in Germany -9, in Belgium -7, in the UK -11, in Iberia -8, North America growth for 4, rest of the Europe at -1, rest of the world at a plus of 11, and that totals to the -3 that I mentioned in September. Well, that completes the presentation. We now move on to the Q&A session.
So, operator, please, first question.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you have a question, please press star, then 1 on your touchtone phone. If you wish to be removed from the queue, please press the hash key or the pound sign. If you are using a speakerphone, you may need to pick up the handset first before pressing the numbers. Margot Joris from KBC Securities is online with a question.
Good morning, gentlemen. A few questions from my side, please. The first one is on the behavior of your U.S. clients. During the investor days, Adecco referred to an ongoing uncertainty, which is the reason why U.S. customers still prefer temps over perms. While Manpower isn't hearing much about the fiscal cliff from its customers, you report good growth in the U.S. perm fee business. Could you shed some more light on the U.S. market, please? And then the second question, could you guide us on the operating expenses for the fourth quarter? And thirdly, do you expect to keep the gross margin stable in the fourth quarter versus at 18.2% this quarter? Thank you.
Yeah, to start with the perm, we saw a continuous, actually, an improving a percentage of perm in our staffing business. It went from plus 30%, a bit more than 30% growth in Q2 to more than 50% growth in perm in Q3 in staffing. We saw about a 10% growth in perm in professionals. So all in all, that for sure looks good. You mentioned uncertainty of clients, and that's why they would use staffing. I think in general, if you look at the developments in the U.S., I expect actually that the penetration rates of staffing will for a while keep on going up. It does not only have to do with uncertainty. I think also we see that the drive for more efficient organizations in the U.S. has hit home. So they see that they need to fluctuate more faster in a volatile market. And three, of course, obviously the professional business by definition, as I mentioned before, I think the size of the market is going up because it's price times quantity. And it's not only penetration rates we should look at. We should also look at the what actually builds up the market. And we see more and more flexibilization occurring in the professionals market. That means even if penetration rates would stabilize, the value of the market is still going up because professionals market is seeing higher penetration rates. Does that answer your question?
Yes, yeah. Thank you.
There were two more questions on OPEX and gross margin. It's rather simple. OPEX will be lower in Q4 because, you know, that's the result of the restructuring programs. And GM typically, gross margin typically, is a notch higher in the fourth quarter, but that's depending on the developments in the mix. So we'll have to see.
Okay, thank you. But so you don't guide on the decrease in operational costs in the fourth quarter?
No, but we have guided on recovery ambitions, and I think Q3 clearly proves that we take this seriously. I'd like to ask all of you to limit your questions to two to make sure that everybody gets his or her turn.
Now, one fact you could actually derive from the numbers, we're going to see a cost reduction of at least 4 million in Q4 at Randstad the Netherlands. But that's the simple calculation of the reorganizations we conducted. So that's a good start, I'd say.
Okay, thank you.
Jamie Brandwood from UBS London is online with a question.
Morning. Two questions then. Firstly, just on France, you were talking about how obstacles were being created. Wondered if you could be a little bit more specific, because I guess Adecco's Investor Day just over a month ago suggested that there were no new headwinds from a regulatory perspective in the French market. So just interested to get your take on what you mean by obstacles. And then secondly, on Germany, how you plan to deal with the introduction of these collective labor agreements on the 1st of November, and how many of your temps are covered by these agreements in Germany. Thanks.
Well, the remark about obstacles refer to a variation of issues, but you know, the fact that income taxes are raised to a very high level does not, we believe, contribute to healthy circumstances in the French market. But a specific element, for example, is repatriation of dividends across the group from the French activities into the holding. There are clear new obstacles in place to transfer money from one operating company to another, and I would say that's clearly an example of something that's not helpful.
Is that going to mean a higher tax rate for you or something like that?
Well, the question, of course, is if we do transfer money from France to the holding, but if you do so, indeed, you have to pay, I would call it a penalty over dividends paid to the holding.
On Germany, Jamie, the introduction of the collective labor agreement, I must say I'm very proud of the progress we have made in Germany. Our systems are actually completely changed and are now in line with all the regulations that are in the two CLAs that we have concluded. Obviously, the biggest one, that's with Verdi, that's on the services, has not been concluded.
Okay.
So that still has to wait. The effect is we'll see is that we will need considerable actually price increases with our clients for November 1.
Yep.
We're in the midst of implementing those. I expect actually a fairly a successful operation there. What I do, on the other hand, is that clients will be reluctant to pay our margin over the extra surcharges that we will pay people when they work for a period of time. So, for example, after 6 weeks, the surcharge would be 15%.
Yep.
What we do see is that clients are reluctant to pay the same percentage margin over that 15%. So that means nominally the profit would not change, but if you look at it as a percentage, it might have an effect. How big the effect is going to be, actually minor, because your second question focuses the right elements. How many people are actually involved? We have two collective labor agreements that have been concluded. It's both for the metal industry and for the chemical industry.
Yep.
That is a smaller part of the business. Metal is big because that includes automotive.
Yeah.
However, all the big car producers already are at user pay, so there we won't be confronted with any additional surcharges.
Okay.
And then we should also keep into account that a part of our business, of course, is already that we already pay higher than user pay. If you, for example, would look at secretaries, bookkeepers, what have you, and professionals. So it means that a smaller part of our total employees working is affected by the changes.
And what kind of smaller part, sort of 10%, less than 10%? Any indication?
No, I think it will be north of 10%, but not a lot.
Okay.
Jamie, I was thinking about your first question and the reference you made to Adecco. let me be also be clear on low wage subsidies. We do not see any upcoming changes for now.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Next. Mark Schwarzenberg from ING is online with a question.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. Also, two questions from my side. First of all, to come back on the equal pay situation coming up in Germany. Ben or Robert-Jan, could you give us, and you probably made already a sort of calculation, give us a sort of sensitivity to the gross margin impact? Because you mentioned that on an absolute level the profit should be similar, but what would be the impact on your gross margin if, say, for instance, all of your clients do not accept, say, the increase on the margin side? Could you give us a number on that? How that will impact the gross margin?
But as I often state, when if the assumption is right, the conclusion also is right. And here we have a lot of assumptions to get to the calculation. But an example of the calculation would be, an example, Mark, I can't stress it enough. First of all, it only kicks in after 3 months. So a bigger part of a population works less than 3 months on a job. So we're talking about a smaller part of, let's assume, 15% of a population. Where it actually is valid. And then we're talking about 15% increase. So now you can make your own calculation because you know you have an idea of a margin about in Germany. Eh? So that's why the total effect will not be very big. Only on a client basis, of course, it would look as if the margin would go down. Does that help?
Yeah, definitely does. Then on the cost side, in one of the slides, Robert-Jan mentioned showed us the impact from the charges and the savings from that, the 3 million. So I presume that's the 12 million on an annualized basis. To my knowledge, the charges, say 4 quarters rolling, are more in line with 40, 50 million. Correct me if I'm wrong. Does it mean that we can still at least save 7 to 10 million of additional savings coming out of these programs, or not?
Yep. Mark, this is Jan-Pieter. The calculation is based on the assumption that the most part of the restructurings have been executed in the course of Q2, so it only reflects savings, on average the quarter.
So the 3 million is only from the charges from Q2 and what has been done in Q3?
Yeah.
I see.
It's indicative.
Okay, and there will... Can I ask one more question on the contract?
Yeah.
In France, looking at the trend in France, because you mentioned, we will merge some branches and we'll work with natural attrition to avoid having to talk to unions. Given the trend now visible, is it likely that we might see further measures in Q4, or is that still too early?
Hi, Mark. Good morning. This is Jacques. The trend is worrying. We do see, as of mid-September, quite a lot less demand, for example, at our in-house clients. So we will definitely step up the speed at which we are consolidating branches. And you cannot call this a social plan formally, but of course we're in discussion with unions because if anything, and we do this in any country, you get into discussions with unions. So we do want to speed up these plans and get to a maximum of savings possibilities.
Thank you very much.
Aaron Rambukus from Kempen is online with a question.
Yes, morning, gentlemen. Just one question. Jacques, can you shed some more light on the delta in the year-on-year trends in France, Q2 over Q3? So, I mean, going from minus 5 to minus 12. I mean, you said yourself, partly it's the market circumstances, but I think the market circumstances weren't great either in the second quarter, and still you outperformed the market substantially. And now it seems like you're falling back to market level. So what happened over there? Did the company walk away from not profitable contracts, or is it just a reflection of where the market is?
Well, the decrease has been already in December. That's already a decline. If you talk about our outperformance is mainly due to in-house. And with these in-house clients, we do see a lot less demand. So this is actually market which is gone, has not gone to competition, and that decreases our outperformance. In that sense, you're right.
Okay. Well, that's my question. Thank you very much.
Joshua Veitch from Barclays is online with a question.
Good morning, guys. Two questions from me. First, looking at restructuring charges, what do you guys expect for Q4 and then into next year, especially in light of the branch closures in France that you've been talking about? And then secondly, on gross margin, looking farther forward into 2013, you've done a great job this quarter, and it looks like some of that will persist, but what kind of one-off effects were there in 2012 that are going to help the gross margin walking into 2013?
Second question is zero. And the first question, Jacques-Alain?
Yeah, on the branch closures, we don't expect a big bang because we will take the costs as they come. Please be informed that if, for example, you move three branches into one, it's not that you move into one, but you need to rent a new one. So there's also some practicalities here. So it's going to be a program which will run throughout 2013.
And just in case your question relates to the group-wide restructuring, we've included this slide 23 to show that most of the cost reductions are going through field steering and natural attrition. Some of it is through restructuring, and we have a clear guidance internally is that we allow for restructuring as long as the payback term is 12 months. So we consider this to be sort of an investment program. And we have already indicated in the outlook that we expect to see some of that in the next quarter as well. And, you know, if next year shows a decline of business as well, we'll also show some restructuring charges. But I do not expect the ratio to be very different from what you see in this slide.
Dave Collier from Rabobank is online with a question.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. A follow-up on the cost savings. So given the 80 million in Q3 and the additional cost savings you expect for Q4, could we expect that you will arrive at the very top end of your cost savings target? So that's close to the 100 million euro per annum. That's the first one.
No, the thing that I have to contradict or can't agree to, of course, is top end, because we don't know what's going to happen in markets. So we'll keep on adjusting. And again, what we try to show on the slides where we actually give the split between the sources of cost reduction, it's clear that the biggest one is natural attrition, and that's why we decide whether or not we replace people or not. And of course, on the other hand, we have areas where we are growing. And the natural attrition, to give you an exact number, is 27% in Q3, so it gives us ample room to actually reduce. So on the 7,200 million, for sure, we are more than pleased with what we have achieved on such a short notice. But the actual cost reduction will completely depend on market developments, and we have we always have enough room to actually breathe with what the market dictates. So I can't say that will be the top end of the savings. I hope it is. I hope we don't need to be more, but it could be.
Okay. And to be very clear, the target of cost savings, that's a net figure or a gross figure? So let's say it's including inflation impact already or not?
Inflation, I don't care too much about, but it does exclude currency effects.
It excludes currency effects. In some markets, there's quite some wage inflation probably next year as well, like Belgium, for example.
Yeah, it could be. Although the biggest inflation obviously is first of all, I think, in Argentina, where inflation is at about 23%. The next biggest one is probably in India, where they talk about 8 to 10%, but again, the small impacts. But indeed, the automatic inflation compensation in Belgium is something that's not the smartest law they put in place.
An obstacle.
Yeah, it's a French-like obstacle. Yeah, indeed. Yeah.
And maybe a quick one on professional staffing, because the trend is down a bit more than in traditional staffing. Could you elaborate a bit more, for example, on the developments in France, where we see quite a collapse in professional staffing demand?
Yeah, that is true. It's of course in line with the market. Although our biggest loss is in IT, where we do see a type of profile, you might say help desk operators, which is also less in demand. So that's also a structural thing in the market which doesn't help. but it is, yeah, it is in line with what we see in the market. Yeah.
Again, we also see, of course, we are very happy with the U.S. performance, but we also see that the growth in the U.S. Is declining, and also so in the professionals, particularly in the IT segment. We see engineering still booming, but the other segments of professionals are slowing down. So all in all, I think it's almost a global event, excluding the new markets like Brazil, where actually we're growing more than 100%, but that's with India, etc. That's so small that the impact is unfortunately still too small. But in the future, watch and see. But so it, I think it's overall. It's over. Yeah.
Okay, we have some patience then. Thanks for your answers.
Hey, that's the first. Thank you, David.
Matthew Lloyd from HSBC is online with a question.
Good morning, gentlemen. I wondered specifically about France, two questions. One, if you could give us some idea of the absolute sort of numbers of temps. So if we take out wage rate and mix and all of the things that tend to move about, whether what that's doing sequentially, so whether the year-on-year movement is more about the comp or whether it's the sequential number is, absolute number is falling. And then a second slightly more technical question. In perm placement in France, does your number include placement fees for CDD contract people?
Yes, it does, the last one. We got, Ben already mentioned it regarding the US, we got perm in staffing, and that is CDD or CDE. We don't measure it as such. The client just hires someone, CDD or CDE, and we charge a fee if it goes through us. The decline we mentioned, it's all about volume. There are no real significant wage effects. As you probably know, in Europe, wage effects are rather stable, with the exception of Germany, where you go into a legal legal change. But in France, it's all about volume.
But how much of that is the comp to last year? So French market data, for example, rather suggests that the number of French temps has been reasonably static for a few months now.
That's actually, well, compared to last year, it's going down in volume. What you sometimes see, and that's not what I have at hand, the difficulty is that sometimes the EWs go down, but then the hours per EW go down more, and that has an aggravating effect, but it's not comps as such.
The difference, bill rate per hour Q3 this year and last year is 0.7%, so really, and again, we have a big population, we're talking about 90,000 people, so the actual comp effect by definition is always low.
Thank you.
Next question, please, operator.
Matthijs van Nieuwenhof from Kepler Capital Markets is online with a question.
Yeah, good morning, everyone. A couple of questions. First one on the marketing expenses in the Netherlands relating to the Olympic team. How much, maybe you already mentioned it, but how much were these expenses? Secondly, on the gross margin, I was quite surprised by the HRS development. What are your expectations going forward? And last one is, you were talking about, you've got the slide number 14, and it says that the public services in the Netherlands, is the revenue development is going well. However, if I look at slide 18, you were saying that impact public sector in the UK and NL. Could you explain that a little bit more?
Yeah, marketing expenses, a couple of million for the Netherlands. So that's easy. HRS, we see growth in RPO. We see outplacement growing. We see payroll growing. So those activities are actually doing very well, as we also mentioned in our
MSP.
Yeah, of course, MSP, right. That also, as also mentioned in our press release, public sector in the Netherlands, that's mainly the let's say lower level part of the market that is recovering. And you say on slide 18, is it, you mean the slide with the different segments?
Yeah, exactly. And then the bottom one.
This is Pascal. That relates to the professionals business, and that's still double digit down. So if you look at slide 16, the revenue development per industry, that is related to the whole industry in the Netherlands, and that's including staffing. And that's up, mid-single digit.
Okay, but if I look at the public professional segments, then it's double digit down. That's what you're saying.
No, not in the Netherlands.
Well, hang on.
About 16. We give you the growth rate per industry, and there you see that the public sector in the Netherlands has a single plus. That means it's a single digit growth.
Exactly, yeah.
And of course, we all agree that 2% is a single digit growth. So it's consistent, I'd say. But this is the Netherlands, huh? Because you also talked about the UK, so I don't know where that,
yeah, okay,
that comes in.
Yeah, you referred to slide 14, and that is the UK.
Yeah, I have to look at the bottom line. It was slide 16. Yeah, sorry about it.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I get it. I get it. Thanks.
Good. Perfect.
Well, I'm glad we didn't make a mistake because it sometimes happens.
Okay.
All right, then we have dealt with all the questions. There's no one in line anymore, and I think this indicates the fact that the press release was clarifying. We'd like to see you all on the 21st of November at the Investor Day. Looking forward to see you over there, and thanks for listening in. Bye.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.